You are listening to the Kelly Confidential Podcast with Kelly Wilkes. This is episode 28. Welcome to the Kelly Confidential Show, where we talk negotiation essentials and those crucial conversations empowering extraordinary women. Real women, real issues. Let's jump in. Hi, friends, and welcome back. How's your week been, and where are you listening from today? Maybe you're out on the train or in the car. Maybe you're out on a walk or, smashing it at the gym. I always listen to my podcasts on the train or when I was out at Dorney Lake walking the pups. I loved taking my earbuds out, just walking around. It's great. But wherever you are in the world, thanks for being here. And I hope you're enjoying these more bite-sized shows. I'm trying to keep them to within about 20 minutes, 25 minutes in. And also my interviews around sort of the 40-minute mark so that you can get to the punchline, right? There's nothing worse than tucking into a great show and then bam, your train arrives and you have to carry on to your job. How rude. Or you finish your workout and you're just at the best part of the show. It's just really irritating. So I hope these shorter, bite-sized episodes are good for you. But leave me some feedback. Let me know if you're digging these shorter sessions. I call them negotiation shorts. And I'm also going to start hosting them, negotiation shorts, with some live content on my YouTube channel very soon. So stay tuned for that. Right. So today we're going to cover something I see happen all of the time in negotiations and why it's so costly to you. I share this and all of my episodes really in the hopes that these little nuggets of experience will stay with you and you'll apply these learnings the next time deal making calls. So I hope this is going to be one of those gems. Now, not everyone is trained in negotiation and fewer do it for a living. So it's unrealistic to expect the average person to know how to plan for, execute on, and close a deal successfully. And by successfully, I mean, you know, within the goal parameters you set for yourself. So I would say most people I encounter, even seasoned business leaders, don't have a lot of experience in structured negotiation. And hands down, women lag behind far more than men in this space. Why? Well, because of centuries of generational and institutionalized sexism. And this can be seen plainly in the way certain courses have been built and marketed to men. We see this still in STEM. And this absolutely still exists in the way negotiation courses are marketed to men, especially at university level. Sure, some of the colleges have, you know, added the token female on their glossy brochures. But you need only scratch the surface of the curriculum to see the male perspective dominates. And certainly in the choice of terms like, you know, modules like controlling the narrative or power positioning, etc. And this is a real liability for women-owned businesses and whole economies in, you know, and communities surrounding those businesses because it stunts women's ability to secure critical capital investment, to close a better deal on a new house, maybe to land that sterling job at the pay she knows she should receive. And I talk about this at length in my courses, and you can hear more in my podcast I did on this in February, podcast number 25, specifically talks about how universities market to men. So back to the point, there are many pitfalls that can hinder novice negotiators or hobbyist negotiators, as I call them, those folks that, you know, buy a house or a car every few years, do the odd deal at work. And so should people negotiate more, you know, more frequently? Absolutely. This is another area I wax on about, and I provide a long and possibly surprising list of things folks should negotiate for every time. And I mean every time. This is everything from new furniture to travel packages to income taxes. It might be a surprising list, but yeah, check that out. And so, so some of the most common mistakes made by beginners, things that I see, include focusing too much on price, being unprepared, so winging it, letting emotions influence their decisions, so, you know, losing sight of the goal. Another one is competing instead of collaborating. I see that all the time in business. I see that a lot where egos kick in, and talking too much and not listening. And I again see that a lot. And I'm just wondering, you know, knowing these and hearing these, does that hopefully resonate with you? And perhaps you'll explore these further, either through my teachings or maybe you'll do your own research, how to overcome these slippery slopes, because they can absolutely be overcome. But what is the most costly of all of them? It's one I didn't name, and it's one you won't be expecting. Are you ready? Well, let's jump in and I'll tell you. So what is the number one most costly mistake I see again and again in a negotiation? Are you ready? It's treating the deal like a conversation. I'll let that sit there for a second. Now, many of you will be like, what? Doesn't she always yammer on about building rapport, creating trust, getting to know the other, ask questions? Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I do. I suggest all of those good practices, and they are really good practices. But this is different. We must remember that a negotiation is the exchange of ideas and information between two or more people to more positively influence the outcome of a situation or a transaction. Nowhere in that definition is it considered conversational. Dialogue, exchange, of course, yes, but conversational, no. And why does that make a difference? Why could this be so problematic in deal making? Because linguistic scientists tell us that from our early years, people become locked into and are hostages at times to social interactions that play out in speech. And based on our learned experiences, we come to plan for and expect a predictable social interchange as we make our way through the conversation. One person says one thing, the other person is obliged to follow a social cue to confirm their responsibility in the next exchange of dialogue. And expectations are particularly heightened if the dialogue is between two strangers. Civility demands politeness. And isn't it impolite if someone asks you a question and you don't answer it? Or you give them a different statement? What do you think? It's tricky. Professor and social scientist Dr. Elizabeth Stokoe is an expert in conversational analysis. She's based here in Britain. And in 2018, she wrote just an excellent book called Talk, Explaining and Charting the Technical Interaction in Speech as an Aid in Anticipating and Overcoming Conflict. Her teachings are used extensively by police, mediators, and emergency services to help to de-escalate critical crisis situations. I had the great fortune to listen to her speak in person twice. I met her once, and I absolutely devoured her book when I was studying to become a legal mediator. And what I loved most about her observations was the reminder that conversation isn't a frilly language journey of dialogue between two or more people, but hardwired social cues that have a delicate balance when under pressure. But what I learned myself through years and years of negotiation, mostly successful, some failed, of course, we've all had failed negotiations, was that responding contrary to the expected response can also be a powerful tool when you most need it. Hold that thought. I'll come back to that. But make sure you check out her book. It's I've got the details in the show notes. So what does it sound like in a normal conversation between strangers? What are the turns? We call them turns, these exchanges. What are the turns people expect? And why is this so costly in a negotiation? Stay with me. You're going to want to hear the answer. In a normal conversation, using this example, let's say two business people are meeting for the first time after several lead-up phone conversations. They're meeting at business person B's office. Business person A says, "We're keen to get this deal across the table. We've pulled out all the stops on this, absolutely everything." Business person B says, "Okay, good to know. We'll be convening in this room over here to run through your points." Now, what did you notice in those two turns? The first person lays it on thick that they've worked hard on the deal, and the implication is that there's really very little wiggle room. It doesn't matter, though, as the second person feels forced to follow the normal social cues and offers what is a positive reply. "Good to know." That's a positive reply. And then continues in that polite vein to act as host in escorting the business person to the meeting room. Now, what do you think happens if this polite social exchanging trap continues? What if it continues after the first offer is made? Now, you might have a plan, which is good. You might also have a list of tradables. If you don't have that, you need to definitely grab my workbook and templates on how to do that. I'll leave it in the show notes. But what's the social dictate when someone makes an offer? We're hardwired to be polite and respond. If someone asks a question, we feel obliged to answer the question, not to respond with a statement or, worse, another question. If someone makes an offer, it's hardwired in us because of the social cues we've integrated with throughout our entire upbringing to try to meet that offer. Truly, if you let your subconscious steer, they would always attempt to find a happy middle ground because it's polite to share, right? In fact, this is called the rule of halves, and it's a psychological phenomena. And this is at the heart of why it will cost you. And I see it all the time. People have a plan. They have a number. The negotiation starts. Business person A sets a number, and business person B follows the leader into that exchange and anchors themselves subconsciously to that number. They can't unhear it. And because they want to be polite, they've been taught to be polite to strangers, their number now feels a million miles away. Their number, which was totally realistic and, you know, practical when they started, now feels a million miles away, and they start to second guess themselves. And what else do they do? Most people, truly most people, will give in to the second offer to split the difference. Possibly they might make it to round three, but most end up here. You never want to do this. And this, again, is a different lesson for another day. And I think I covered this also in one of my earlier episodes. But in short, it's because you've just shown your counterpart that you can move 50% of the difference. 50%. That's a lot. Avoid this. And if you want proof that this is the typical response, the hostage of social cues, all you have to do is watch any of those shows like Dragon's Den or my favorite, mainly because of this, which is A Place in the Sun, which for non-Brits listening, the show here I mentioned is a real estate show where Brits go abroad to buy property in sunny climates like Spain, France, etc. And they're offered three properties. And usually by the end of the show, they're expected to put in an offer via the TV host, who's meant to be a realtor, I guess, but, and to be fair, really should know better. But anyway, and they always do this. They follow the lead, or they, you know, counteroffer, but they find themselves being pulled down into that channel where they've just lost sense of their original goal and their plan. And they find themselves compromising their original price to settle on the difference. This is costly. It could be very, very costly. So I can hear you saying, Kel, what's the punchline? How do we deal with this? Well, firstly, make sure you listen long enough to hear the punchline. Hopefully you've got 5 more minutes on your train or time to go around the lake again, but you're going to want to hear this, and we're now at that part. So you need to recognize that a negotiation just is not a conversation. Of course you should still be polite, but not at the sacrifice of your goals, especially when dealing with money. And this is especially for women who have been forced by sexist dictates over centuries that we should be obliging hosts at all times. Be smart, but don't be difficult. Be shrewd, but don't be awkward. All of those double standards, you need to forget those. At the very least, be mindful that they still exist. They absolutely still exist. Remind yourself that these are social constructs, and it's natural that you may feel hardwired to oblige. But most seasoned negotiators also know this, and they will use it to their advantage. So if you remember nothing else in the show, I want you to hear my voice and digest this. Play my words back every time you go into a new deal. And this is, your second move matters more than your first. Let me repeat that. Your second move matters more than your first. That is to say, don't follow the leader. Stay focused on your goals and only offer in increments that you know you can manage near to that original goal. These are usually single-digit percentages, tops. If you're prepared to go double digits, you're either lowballing to start, which has its own risks, or you've not read the market properly and you're not in control of your deal. Case in point. So make an offer or let your counterparty make an offer, but whatever you do next must be to maintain an anchor to your original number. If it goes yet another round and they stay at the top of their number, do you leap up in your offer or go halves? No, definitely not. Make another offer that's sitting literally next to your first. This is called the anchoring effect, and you need to resist temptation to ease tensions and follow the polite social cues, and instead stay there in that tight space around your optimal number, and one of two things will happen. They will either bite and meet you on or very near your number, or they'll say no. Nobody's going to die if they say no. This is expected in every deal. Every deal has a 50% chance of drawing a no. So you must always prepare for that. That doesn't mean you give up, though, and you leave the house or you leave the car lot and you leave whatever behind. You must keep going, so you just try a different tactic. You pull out your tradables, not literally, of course, you should know these in your head, so don't pull out my workbook, printed version, don't do that. But, you know, make sure you know your tradables, have these ready, and then start working your way through. Read my workbook about tradables, just so you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, does that make sense? Your second move is the anchoring move. Resist the social cues. Stay focused. Remain polite, but steadfast, and don't negotiate with yourself. You've got this. Try it out on some smaller deals, remain anchored, and you'll be amazed at the results, I promise. Well, that's all from me today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and be sure to give us a like and a follow so that we can continue to bring you great content. And be sure to listen next week when I'll be hosting Christine Walsh again. She'll be joining me on the show to talk about the mindset and planning advice for starting your own business. Don't miss it. Until next time.